The entire school police department of Uvalde, Texas, was suspended yesterday. The chief was placed on leave and is expected to resign. Another official is on leave also. Of course, it was the school police, along with other agencies, that waited more than an hour before entering Robb Elementary back in May. And that was even as students trapped by a shooter pleaded with emergency operators for help. Parents of the victims have spent the last 5 months pushing for accountability and reform. As Texas Public Radio's Yvette Benavides reports, they were thrilled with yesterday's news.
Outside the Uvalde School District offices, family members sat in folding portable chairs. They congregated in shifts so that at least a few family members were present at all times over the last 10 days. The announcement about the suspensions came via email, and word spread quickly through the group.
I was staying here until they did that, and they did it. So now I'm going home.
Brett Cross, the uncle and guardian of 10-year-old Uzziah Garcia, was there when news of the suspensions came.
I'm so proud of you.
We're so proud of you.
You deserve that. You deserve every tear that you're going to shed right now.
His wife, Nikki, and other victims' relatives hugged and high-fived. They seemed elated about the news, but there were also tears. When he tried to walk, Cross fell to his knees and wept silently while his wife and friends comforted him.
You know, you tell your kids that you're going to protect them and everything, and they made a liar out of me on May 24th because I couldn't protect my son. They weren't going to make a liar out of me again.
The victims' families plan to continue their protest Monday at the Uvalde School Board meeting. Superintendent Hal Harrell is expected to announce his retirement. And these families of the victims say they're ready to stand up and protest for other causes, too. Kimberly Mata Rubio's daughter, Lexi, was killed in the shooting. She says that she and other families will focus their activism on gun reform. They've been pushing Texas to raise the age to buy an assault rifle from 18 to 21, something Governor Greg Abbott has called unconstitutional.
It's on a small level. We're focused on Uvalde, but look what happened. We're stronger in large numbers. So if we can get behind this for gun reform, think of what we can do.
For now, the focus in Uvalde is restoring confidence in school safety. I'm Yvette Benavides in Uvalde.
Over the last 3 weeks, schools across the U.S. have been targeted by a new wave of hoax calls. Somebody calls the school or local dispatch to say an active shooter is on the campus and that some people have already been shot. The school is then put on lockdown, police swarm the scene, and in some cases, panicked parents rush to the location. As NPR domestic extremism correspondent Odette Youssef has found, there seems to be a pattern, and she joins us now. Odette, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
How many schools have received these calls recently, and what have you learned about them?
Well, Scott, mostly looking at local news reports, I've counted up to 114 calls that may fall into this category. That's just within the last 3 weeks, and it covers 19 states and the District of Columbia. You know, these schools have been mostly high schools, but there are some middle and elementary schools, and it's a mix of public and private schools. I just want to play a bit of audio from some of the calls that we obtained through open records requests, and bear in mind, these are clips from three separate calls.
Emporia Police, this is Patrick Katz. How can I help you?
Hello, there is an active shooter at the high school, Greensboro High School. Hello, 9 students got injured at Greensboro High School. There is an active shooter.
St. Cloud Police Department.
Active shooter.
Your phone is cutting in and out. I can't hear you.
Hello, there is an active shooter at Apollo High School.
Greenfield Dispatch.
Hello, there is an active shooter at Central High School. Hello, there is an active shooter at Central High School.
So, chilling to listen to. You know, the first of those calls, Scott, was in Virginia on the 19th. The next one was 2 days later in Minnesota, and that last one was 2 days after that in Ohio. And as you can hear, the narrative script is nearly identical. All three calls sound like the same, a grown man with a heavy accent, and a number of other details about these calls seem to fit a pattern.
And why are the calls called swatting, Odette?
Swatting is a term used to describe hoax calls made to law enforcement that claim that violence is underway or about to occur, and it's intended to set off a huge and immediate law enforcement deployment, including SWAT teams, hence the term, to that location. You know, this can be really dangerous. You know, police are showing up hot with guns drawn. You know, they may be breaking down doors. And what's really concerning here is that swatting kind of originated in spaces with extremely online communities, including live gaming communities, as a prank, it's also something that extremists do to intimidate and harass their perceived ideological enemies. But this seems to be something else entirely.
And Adet, what have you been able to learn from investigators and local authorities?
Well, the FBI is saying just that it's aware of these incidents and working with law enforcement at several levels. But Scott, the more intriguing information has come from some local news reports quoting authorities who said that there are indications that these calls may be connected to overseas. You know, these calls were coming from internet phone numbers or VoIP, and some reports have said that the IP addresses linked to the calls appear to originate in Africa. One Minnesota police chief was quoted saying the calls were coming specifically from Ethiopia. But there's a lot of reason to question this. Here's Drew Evans of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension.
What we don't know is, you know, whether or not overseas could have been used as a mask. In other words, they could have routed this, and you can route VoIP calls through different countries. We don't know if that occurred, but there's certainly a connection to other countries from the United States.
But on the other hand, the specificity of how these calls were placed also suggests a level of local knowledge that one wouldn't really expect from an overseas actor. You know, Scott, I think regardless of whether this is a domestic or foreign campaign, the big question is still there, and that question is why?
Well, we'll let you get back to your fine reporting. NPR domestic extremism correspondent Odette Youssef, thanks so much.
My pleasure.